We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, win time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and much more. And with its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
Every child deserves a team. That's the belief behind Jigsaw Learning, a proud sponsor of the B Podcast Network. And it's why the company, founded by educators Curtis and Lorna Hewson, focuses on ensuring success for all learners through collaborative response, an approach in which every child is supported by a team. Through customized professional learning that incorporates workshops, leadership development, online learning opportunities, and more, Jigsaw Learning can guide you every step of the way to create a plan to maximize the collective capacity in your schools. Learn more at jigsawlearning.ca.
Welcome back to another show, and this show is the third in a series of four. I'm here again with Mike James, and we've been talking about building more powerful community. And in essence, bringing SEL practices, provable, tangible SEL practices that increase student success into schools and why that matters. We dance around that a lot, but we don't really always think about the results and how to do that. So the great thing about Mike James is he brings us the whole picture and talks about the whole picture, not just about the mindful minute in the morning and how it makes you feel better and, you know, breath work and yoga and meditation and what are the differences and how do you start and is it unattainable? But instead, he talks to us about the science behind it and how science is proving these things. Now, you might be asking yourself, if you haven't listened to the first two, who Mike James is.
Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it worth exploring. More time for personalized learning, increased choice and agency for students, and the increased engagement that comes along with it. Dedicated time for intervention. Overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flexible time for any purpose, and with seamless SIS integration, a student locator, flexible daily rostering, and an intuitive mobile app, it eliminates the common challenges of implementation and management. Want to see for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
Putting in the energy towards these things, putting in the energy to learn these things, putting in the energy to develop yourself and improve your own self-awareness around your emotions, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, decision-making, right? Self-efficacy, putting in that time as a leader, as a teacher, as a person, as a member of the community, that's what will drive these communities to be more powerful.
Dr. Chris Jones here, and welcome to Seeing to Lead, a show designed to help leaders increase their ability to effectively support, engage, and empower their staff through intentional practices so that they create an environment where everyone reaches their greatest level of success. On Seeing to Lead, communication rules the day as we hear voices from both teachers and leaders in an effort to examine perspectives, highlight misunderstandings, and provide steps to ultimately bridge the gap between what teachers need and provide through thoughtful dialogue. This show is about amplifying voices, creating understanding, and providing information to help everyone continually improve. I want to personally thank you for taking the time. Now, let's get to getting better.
Well, Mike is a passionate coach, mentor, and leader who's dedicated to fostering positive change through the principles of MIRA. That's mindset, intention, and right action. With his 17 years of experience in guiding, leading, and building national programs designed to teach, train, develop, and inspire, Mike brings a wealth of expertise in this area. His personal goal is to instill positive psychology principles and inspire communities of all sizes to become organizations for good. Recently venturing into social and emotional learning, Mike now aims to further amplify his impact. The founder of Simple Healthy Life, Mike is committed to guiding individuals and communities towards personal and collective growth. He inspires introspection, fosters growth, and creates environments where personal and organizational transformation thrives. Now, I mentioned this in the very first episode, and then I'm going to stop talking because Mike's sitting here patiently waiting to talk and drop some serious information on us. But I've also personally worked with Mike for quite a few years. And just to give you an idea, Mike has worked with every member of Team Jones, and I've entrusted my two boys to work with him. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is Mike's got my complete trust. What he's talking about is real. As a matter of fact, he's the real deal. So Mike, welcome to episode 3 of the podcast, I should say.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be here again. I really enjoy our talks. I enjoy the platform. I'm grateful to speak to the educators that follow you and listen to you and really just align myself with you because I really enjoy your perspective and the way you've been doing things for all these years that I've got to know you guys.
Yeah, this is great because, you know, as we met and talked about the idea of having you come on the podcast and you laid out building more powerful community, if that isn't perfect and relevant for schools and what schools need in today's world, then I don't know what it is. And, you know, you talk about building is about teaching, more is about training, powerful is about development, and community is about inspiring. And we've talked about, you know, knowing ourselves, that bigger picture and how we go about that, getting 1% better when we were talking about more and how we do that more of a tactical end. But today is interesting. Today, we're going to continue on this. And one of the things I did say when I was introducing you is you combine that whole picture. So now we're talking about powerful today. And powerful means different things to different people in different realms. So the thing is, though, because it's school, and we like our science, you have a formula that we're going to operate under today. So you're going to kind of set the parameters and let us know what you're talking about. I've set it up.
Sure.
Run with it.
Oh, that's so awesome. Yeah. So this concept, right? Powerful in development, right? Whenever we're learning something, and I think it's really important, and it's kind of the way that I've set up my company. It's the way I've set up my life is teach, train, develop, inspire, right? You don't build anything without all four of those elements. And I remember sitting in this meeting one time and someone telling me, well, those are all the same thing. I said, okay, well, I don't agree with you. So let's break them down, right? Let's really look at them. So I feel like in the first one, we really just talked about the fundamentals, right? We taught you, we spoke directly about what they were. In the second one, we did a meditation, right? And we worked on training. We actually physically, you know, spent a little bit of time, a tiny bit of time inside our own head together, right? And we talked about what that looks like in there. And this one's going to develop, right? So we want to take these concepts that we've worked with and kind of give you more meat around them, give you more substance around why they're important or why they're impactful. So when we think about power and creating power, generating power, you know, we think about energy, we think about physics, right? Physics, mechanical power, force times velocity. Put a big force towards something and get it going in one direction, it will be more powerful. And I mean, what more of a, you know, there's no more apropos analogy, right? To getting schools moving in a direction, right? When you set the culture and you start to put your force into it and start to move it in one direction and you get to see that velocity happen. The one we're going to use today, though, is actually power in terms of energy. And this is another science formula is the word I'm looking for, science formula for you, right? It's energy equals... power equals energy over time, right? Change in energy over time. So what does that tell us? That tells us that if we want to create something that's more powerful, we need two factors. We need energy and we need time. So this isn't going to be an overnight thing. It's not, you're not going to just put one thing into the school or into the classroom or into your teachers and just say, okay, we did it. We're all now as social and emotional learning experts, right? We all have those five core competencies and we can just go and run with it. We have to remember that even in your mindful minute, we could be talking about 1 minute, right? We could be talking about one total minute. And what we want to be talking about is how the culmination or how the addition of 1 minute can impact a classroom, or the addition of 2 minutes can impact a classroom. Or a better way, in the way that I think we want to talk about it today, is the addition of maybe 3, 4, 5 different questions can impact a classroom. Because I think that's where, when we start to be proactive about this stuff and really looking to develop a curriculum around it, we want to be looking at the questions we ask. We want to be looking at the answers we get. We want to be really helping the students understand that power, at its truest sense, is control, right? And the way you influence. So what do you have control over? You have control over what's going on inside you. And I think that's one of those things that has become cliche, right, in today's society. I mean, we hear all of the things, you know, take control of what you can control and this and that and the other thing. But isn't there a million different examples in our culture, in our world, where we realize the only thing we have control over is us internally? And first you have to learn that and understand it and believe it. And then you have to realize that there's a million examples of it in your everyday life. I said a lot there.
The idea, I like that you brought up it's cliche, because we say that all the time. As a matter of fact, for years when I talked about it, I've talked about, if you take a hula hoop and stand and throw it on the ground and stand in the middle of the hula hoop, the only thing you're actually in control of is what's inside of that hula hoop. All kinds of things going on outside of you. Now, I did that as a physical representation, because when you talk about that to teenagers and, yes, sometimes adults, to say that you only have control over your own actions and your own thoughts is a little bit of an abstract concept for people to understand, because there's the belief that you can exert control and therefore take control over outside of that realm, over other people's actions. Like you can make somebody do something and that's control, where in actuality, that's just conflict. That just causes more conflict. It doesn't allow you to control them. So when I hear you talking about how to help people understand internal power, which is what we want to talk about, which is control and influence, I hear you, and correct me if I'm wrong, just to make sure, I hear you saying that's where we have to start. And the way to help somebody understand that's the way they start, you have some questions, or there's some questions we can ask, and then they need to pay attention to their answers to truly be honest with where they're at as far as understanding that. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. And that's exactly right. I think one of the things that gets lost here is the when. And it's an interesting way to think about it, right? But if we want someone to learn about themselves, if we want someone to really understand what's happening in their own mind, we can't ask them after they had conflict or when they're in the middle of conflict, especially not a 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old human who has no idea why they did the thing they did, because they've never evolved or never looked at it, and are dealing with hormones that have just started to kick in from an athlete perspective, right? And you're going to get these answers that are going to turn you off from asking the questions, right? But I think it's so often, if we decide that we want to go down this path and we want to start being proactive about it, why can't we talk about empathy when there's not a conflict? Why can't we implement, you know, maybe a short story that highlights conflict and empathy, and then talk about that in from a third person, right? And then allow them to bring those emotions, bring those feelings, bring that knowledge and understanding back, internalize it and say, oh, geez, how would I have reacted if this was me, if this is something that happened to me? Right? And I think that is where we can start as teachers and educators. We can start by saying, here's examples of, you know, I think we talked about this book in the past, you know, Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. Right? This person was in Auschwitz, and it was going to be over for him. And he watched everybody around him go away. That's the best way I can put it. And he wrote a book about how the only thing we can control is how we react to a situation. And I know that's an extreme one, but maybe introduce that as part of our learning. It's an extreme example. Thankfully, we're not faced with those type of examples, but they're there for us. And there's plenty of literature and plenty of great teachings that we can learn from this, from these types of books. So instead of, I guess what I'm saying is instead of waiting until there's conflict resolution, we can say, hey, let's start here. Our goal now is to just internalize how we would feel about this particular scenario and then teach from there. Does that make sense?
No, that makes a ton of sense. Because, and you know, Viktor Frankl, I'm a huge fan of Man's Search for Meaning. I still remember why I originally read it. I think it's such an important narrative about the idea of control and influence. And I don't think, okay, so it's an extreme example, but I don't think that should make it a negative example or something that people can't start with, because that really brings it home. And I think in a more valuable way, just my opinion, than a smaller issue or something smaller to struggle with. Because when you're teaching something like this, I believe that for students to internalize it, and again, when I say students, I mean adults, I mean anybody, for a person to internalize it, they can't be able to say or given the opportunity to say, yeah, but that's only when that happens. My issues are so much larger. Because when you have your teenagers, they're dealing with the hormonal piece and all kinds of anatomy and just mental development. When you're dealing with adults, you're dealing with set in their ways, habits, personalities. So both are very difficult to adjust. And if we're to learn, learning's about analyzing. If you're going to learn something, you have to analyze what went before you. Otherwise, you've learned nothing if you don't study what's gone before you. So I think it's really important to do that. And the when piece, proactive all day long. And, you know, people listening to this show, you know, if ideas aren't coming to your head right now, because we have advisory periods, we have things like that where we're looking for discussion, we have class meetings and so forth. But, you know, like circles, you have circle time. Why do you need to wait and utilize, you know, we have peer mentoring, but that's after something's happened. You have student discipline boards after something's happened. Why wait? Why not use some of our proactive things about like circle time, class meetings, and so forth to handle it early, using examples like Viktor Frankl?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's proactive and it's tough to be proactive. Like we live in an environment where we have competing priorities and that just is, it's just the way it is. But when we have competing priorities, we tend to be very reactive because of competing priorities. There's no really, you don't really need to enhance that anymore, right? But if there was something you could do that would improve all of the competing priorities, then you would start there and you would proactively go after that. And the good news for us and for me and for you and for the people listening is this isn't guesswork anymore, right? It was guesswork before when we were in the 1990s and in our parents growing up and, right? It was a thought or a feeling like, hey, I think something about this is right. I don't know what it is, but thankfully we have very smart people across the country that have done countless studies on this stuff and really saying that if you do these things, if you implement social and emotional learning into your curriculum, well, there's benefits across all different aspects of our competing priorities. And I'll give you a couple just because I like to kind of nerd out on this stuff.
Well, hey, that's fitting because so you're telling me this and in schools, everybody listening again is going to go, hey, yeah. In schools, you have your people that are on board with this and want to run with it. And then you have your, you know, your next tier down. That's, well, yeah, I can see where this is good, but I've got stuff to do. And then you've got your other tier that is, well, we've got to get to curriculum and we've got to teach things that are tangible and kids have to succeed and we have to have high scores. And then you have the other group that is like, well, you can't force me to emote and I'm not really that. So there's the gamut. But so you're saying that if this is done, then that you will actually get those increased academic scores.
Absolutely.
Supporting your teachers and students seems to be a struggle. They just don't seem to be engaged. You wish they would take more responsibility for their learning and culture of the building, but they just don't seem to be empowered enough to do it. So, my question is, have you checked out the book Seeing to Lead yet? It's all about creating a true educational experience where learning, growth, leadership, and community take center stage. Full of strategies and resources, Seeing to Lead is about attaining that goal by employing a model that supports, engages, and empowers all individuals to become leaders themselves. Pick up a copy today at seeingtolead.com. That's SEEINGTOLEAD.com. Remember, you don't become a leader and then decide you need to support and recognize others more than yourself. It is the moment you realize it's about supporting and recognizing others that you become a leader. SeeingToLead.com.
I'll give you an example. Is the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, right? CASEL. I think, I'm sure you've heard of it, but I'm not sure all your listeners have had.
Yeah.
Right? They've done extensive research on this stuff. And I love the name, right? They probably researched the name too, if I'm being totally transparent, right? Really helping people understand these two things go together. And before I talk about this, I'll tell you, and I might have used the example in an earlier podcast, but something that stuck with me tremendously, right? I say it all the time, like IQ plus EQ equals success, right? That's not just one or the other. Those two things, where does this come from? Where does it pop its head up? Well, Forbes magazine, for one, right, talks about emotional equivalent being people that make the most money, are in the biggest leadership positions. So, well, you know, that aside, but CASEL has found that by implementing a social and emotional learning program, you'll gain 11 points, 11 percentage points in academic achievement. And believe it or not, actually a little less, only 10% in reduction in behavioral problems. So it benefits academics more in the short term and benefits behavioral things in the long term. So that's one. That's one you can take a look. You can type it into Google, CASEL, and you'll find it in no time whatsoever.
And everybody, and I don't want to jump on you or anything, but something that really stands out to me about that is, first of all, I would have, you know what they say about assuming, but I'm going to go ahead and assume anyways, that everybody's heard of the CASEL wheel. It's the underpinning of any social emotional learning program that's in public schools. So you're really hitting where you know what you're talking about. And the idea that it not only feels good, right? Because it feels good when you do these social emotional competencies, but it's the academic piece. So now there's that hard evidence piece because everybody likes to feel good. And we say, hey, yeah, it increases or it decreases poor behavior, increases good behavior and good decisions. And everybody feels good about that. But to hear that it doesn't do that as good as it increases academic performance.
Right.
So that I just wanted to highlight that because if people really rewind and listen to that again, that's kind of like a mic drop that forget the feel good. If you're not into the feeling good thing, which some people aren't, what about the academic piece that is outstripping the feel good piece?
Right. And that's enough. That's just competing priorities in a tide raising all boats, right? That's what it is. And I think we should never get lost in that. We should never allow ourselves to just say, well, I need to worry about one aspect of education because that's not teach, train, develop, inspire. That's one aspect. Right? We want to do all those things because the people that we're doing this with and doing this for, and bringing it back to our community, this is our community. Right? We live, work, and play in these places. And we want to make rounded, great people. And I think, you know, the state of Massachusetts puts out their goals every year about what they want to do. And it's rounded, well-rounded, great people, start to finish, right? And so when you think about CASEL and think about that type of stuff, there's just so many examples. And I was kind of got lost in a few of them recently because I had a feeling that we were going to talk about how to bring this stuff and how to tactically add this to schools. So I wanted to just maybe take a step back and say, there's a study out there. There's a group of people out there from Columbia University. And I don't want to understate this, right? They are from the Columbia Teachers College, and they did a cost or set there from the Center of Benefit and Cost Studies in Education. So this is just one particular example. What they did is they looked at six different avenues for adding social and emotional learning to schools. And I'll kind of summarize as best as I can, right? One of them is your responsive classroom. I think you guys have probably most people have kind of looked at that. And I know that it's geared towards elementary. But remember, the one of the important parts about this whole conversation is really I want to impact the people that don't think that this is something that should have been done when they were younger. Well, that's not my problem. That's not my job, right? I'll be reactive if something happens, but I'm not going to proactively worry about it because it should have been done. Right? First thing I want to tell all those people right now is that look in the mirror and understand it's a lifetime process, right? We can all improve, every single one of us. So responsive classroom, you guys understand what that is. That's going after and really helping the teachers understand how to get this stuff done, right? Then the second one that I really loved was something called the 4 R's experiment. I'm using the word experiment. I don't think they used the experiment, actually. I don't think that's really the way they wanted me to approach it. But what they did is they replaced your reading and writing time with reading, writing, respect, and resolution. So this is a big one for me because it really ties in and tactically helps you understand how you can add social and emotional learning to your classroom. You already got a group of books for your literature work. I don't know what they are. You know what they are. Maybe they're different across grades, different across age ranges, different across the parts of the country. But what happens at the end? I mean, for me, maybe I'm getting on a tangent here, but for me, I don't remember the books that we read, 42, right? So that's not the main point, I don't think, right? But in this particular curriculum change, what they did is they looked for books that had conflict, diversity, relationship management, relationships, right? And then when they were done reading the book, they spent the time going through and helping the students understand why and how and what happened and what real strong conflict resolution looks like, right? And maybe examples in there where it didn't go well and what, why, and when it went well and why, and internalize that. What they found was a decrease in ADHD, an increase in social competency, and a decrease in aggressive behavior. And this is from your reading and writing materials, right? I'm sure they scored it the same way that they score your normal reading and writing literacy, but over and on top of. And that's something that I don't think can be overstated. I mean, those are my two favorites. There's another couple in there. And I'll just talk real quickly about. They did another one, another study that was done over 3 years across 20 schools where they were aimed at bringing in curriculum around. And I love this part. This is why it stuck out to me. Telling yourself the truth. And I think that's a really powerful thing that we can work on. Now, as soon as I start talking about that, a lot of people are going to immediately put their hands up and be like, I don't really want to cover that, right? And I would argue it's because we know inherently we have to work on that for ourselves, right? And that's where, you know, if you wanted to combine the positive classroom approach about working through the teachers and helping them with their own self-efficacy before we can implement it into the classroom, I think they both have the right line of thinking.
You know, you say that, and two things stuck out to me about those things you were talking about. One, well, three. One, just the impact that is scientifically proven through multiple studies. Not just one study, not just one school district, not just one school or one state even, but multiple locations so that it backs that up. But the why, not how, when reviewing your books. Look, we've got these materials. Schools are wholesale transforming their English curriculums to better meet the diverse populations that are sitting in front. And so we've got the materials for all the students in front of us. But often when you get to the conflict resolution, it's more of talking about how that student resolved that conflict, how that main issue in the novel was resolved. And that's what students are assessed on. So, you know, Mike, tell me how. Tell me how. We need to switch that to tell me why. And with teachers being trained to do that, I think the impact could be huge. The other piece is that modeling piece. When you talk about being honest with yourself, I talk to staff and I talk to other leaders a lot. And I say that is the hardest thing for someone to do in the mirror and be 100% honest with yourself in any given situation that occurs. So that's vulnerable, right? That's tough to do. But if you have teachers accept that about themselves and be vulnerable in front of students for that bit of time, because we talk about how important it's to model thinking. If teachers want students to improve their reading, teachers can model how they read and what they're thinking while they're reading. But if teachers are doing this and modeling what they're thinking through to be honest with themselves, I just think, wow, that's a home run. That's really hitting it home on influencing students' ability to do that themselves.
And that's developing power, right? Isn't that developing power in themselves, in understanding? I think at its very core, that's developing power. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about this, because I am a numbers guy. My career took me through corporate America. So I really do value numbers, and you know, the 11% and the 10% were impactful numbers. But here's another one. And this is what the study was designed to show. Remember, it was done by the Columbia Teachers College, and it was the Center for Benefit Costs, right? What they've proven through these studies, and that they did not do, remember, they analyzed the studies. They proved that for every dollar that you invest in a social and emotional learning program, and before I give you the mic drop piece, I'll tell you how they kind of put this dollar cost in. The dollar cost was actual teacher time, whether that was in the classroom or actual training. I'm going to use the word actual a few more times to go back to our previous conversation, right? Actual classroom time, and then some level of curriculum that they had to work through, and inclusive of, and one of the things I thought was really interesting, inclusive of the time it cost for the researchers to be there. So they did these with all the researchers around. So you could even probably, if you don't have a bunch of researchers in your school, which I'm sure you don't, you could probably bring that dollar down quite a bit. But for every dollar you invested in the social emotional learning program, the benefit over time was $11.
You said 11, right?
11. So that means for every dollar you gave me, I gave you back $11. And I'm not selling you anything. I'm just, for every dollar you put out, you got back $11. And that $11, and this is where it gets very, people a lot smarter than me did it, is all I'm saying. This is where they took all of these different factors that are social and economical, including in the four walls and outside the four walls, right? If you, when I was reading all the studies, there's a way to quantify just about everything according to our, these really smart people out there. They talk about the way drug addiction affects families and communities, the way poor behavior affects those things, the way, and back to the Forbes magazine, you know, discussion, right? The way people that have high emotional IQ or emotional quotient tend to make 30 to 40% more, right? They factor all of those things in. And what they came across is that it's 1 for 11. I mean, think about that for a second, right? There's people out there, and you hit on the different educators that have different goals and priorities. Well, one of them's money, but it just is. And if you told me that if I gave you a dollar, you'd give me 11 back, I would find a lot of money to give you. Quickly. That's what I would do. And I think there's a lot of people out there that would too. So that's an incredibly impactful thing when we think about developing power and developing a social and emotional learning program. And before I stop, I just want to go back to the beginning, right? People want to say, well, why? Well, how? 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 Well, the how is going to take some time for you to really understand what it is, but it's really just power equals energy over time. putting in the energy towards these things, putting in the energy to learn these things, putting in the energy to develop yourself and improve your own self-awareness around your emotions, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, decision-making, right? Self-efficacy, putting in that time as a leader, as a teacher, as a person, as a member of the community, that's what will drive these communities to be more powerful. You can have some help. You've got great teachers. You got great people around you, right? Use them. Right? There's a million ways to learn. We talk, you guys have talked about them more than anybody. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, I was good. I could listen to you talk longer. You've said so much, and you've said so much about the idea of power. And when I say you've said so much, look, we talk about power in so many different ways. We talk about using power to control, using power to influence, but the way you brought it home as far as our power to make this change, because it's not just something that can be done anymore. The idea of incorporating SEL practices is something that needs to be done. Look around at where our society is, the actions that we see, and how many of us sit there and scratch our head and say, really, is this where we are, where we're at? That didn't happen overnight. Just like you said, you know, time over energy. That this, our, where we're sitting now did not arrive overnight. And so the idea of making our communities more powerful and build more powerful communities is not going to arrive overnight. And it starts with those smaller pieces, those 1% steps, getting better 1% each time. And not just the patience, because it takes more than patience. We can't make a step, sit back, wait for good to happen, or wait for it to turn into 2%. We have to purposefully, proactively take these steps by implementing these skills and strategies for our students. Jay.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, the only thing I want to add to that is something that we forget all the time. As educators, we say it all the time. Be afraid to ask for help, right? I mean, really, like what we're talking about is stuff that is or was, and this is where one of the biggest burdens around this change comes. It was taboo. It was just do it on your own. It was just go and be a member of a team and you'll figure it out. You'll see other people being teammates, right? Or you'll have a coach, or you'll have someone who'll teach you. Well, not really, right? You can emulate those people and you can pick up the things that you like about them and you can kind of add them to your world. But why not ask for help? Why not? You know, it's not taboo anymore. There's tactical science, evidence-based things that you can now look at and say, all right, if I do these 5 times in a row, I can look at an outcome and see what that looks like. And that just wasn't available to our generation before, but it's available to us. And what we're talking about at its core is making it more available to the next generation. And I think that's something that is super, I'm going to use my own word here, that's super powerful, right? That's what we're really trying to do here. We're trying to make this stuff more available. One, by taking it internally, like we do with everything, internalizing it and living by example. And two, by actively and proactively working to make it more available for our students.
You know what, Mike? I'm going to leave it there, because when you're talking about proactively making it better for our students, that's the start of that community piece that we're going to talk about in the next section of this. So the next episode of this is the third episode. Look, people, if you just listen to this one, go back, listen to the first two, where you'll really start to get into the flow of this, and then definitely tune in for the next one. But we've got another episode of this where we're going to talk about communities. And then the more I talk to you, Mike, the more I think we are going to sit and, you know, have that fifth episode and just kind of wrap it up and talk a little bit about it.
Well, listen, I'm excited and look forward to the next one.
Well, that's a wrap, but not the end. Next step, be sure to take action on something you heard here today. Hey, thanks for listening to the Seeing to Lead podcast. If you would like to connect for any reason, email me at drchrissj@gmail.com or catch me on Twitter at Dr. C.S. Jones. If you've gotten any value from the Seeing to Lead podcast today, you can help me and other leaders create a world-class environment through a teacher-centric approach by subscribing to the show, leaving an honest rating or review, and sharing this episode on social media with your most valuable takeaway. Also, one last thing. Have you had a chance to pick up my latest 5-star rated book yet? Grab your copy of Seeing to Lead anywhere you buy books or at seeingtolead.com. That's SEEINGTOLEAD.com, where you can learn more and continue to improve. Now go have a successful week.
And now a quick word from our sponsor, Jigsaw Learning. Whether you lead at the school, district, or division level, you're serving a wide array of students, and you know that no one person has all the answers when it comes to meeting each of their needs. That's why Jigsaw Learning helps leaders and their staff and faculty to develop a collaborative approach. Every child deserves a team, and when you put together the pieces of effective collaboration, you can realize that team's full potential. Connection, relationships, and authentic collaboration are at the foundation of Jigsaw Learning's work. Through professional learning presented on site, online, or a blend of both, Jigsaw's team of experienced learning associates works with you to develop a personalized plan to help collaborative response thrive in your organization. Learn why educators have described working with Jigsaw Learning as powerful, wonderful, and beneficial for all students. Visit jigsawlearning.ca and connect with the team for information. That's jigsawlearning.ca.
There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design and SIS integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.